Welcome to Law You Should Know. The law affects every aspect of our lives, our home, our jobs, and our recreational activities. Now you can learn about the law and how to protect yourself against the loss of your liberty or property. Learn how to stand up for your rights and seek compensation when you have been wronged. Your host for Law You Should Know is attorney Kenneth J. Landau with the Mineola Law Firm of Shane, Doxton, Easy, and Corker. He's a member of the Committee on Professional Ethics of the Bar Association of Nassau County and counsel to the Nassau Academy of Law. And now, here is your host for Law You Should Know, attorney Kenneth J. Landau.
Hi, this is Ken Landau, and welcome to Law You Should Know. Today we're going to discuss legal terms you should know about wills, and my guest is attorney George Dipple. And he's an attorney in private practice in Queens, and he concentrates in the area of real estate and also wills and probate and estates. George, welcome back to Law You Should Know.
Thank you, Ken, for having me on your show.
And since one of the areas that you concentrated in is wills and probate and estates, I want to pick your brain for the next few minutes and educate our listening audience about some important terms and erase any misconceptions they may have about them. Why don't we start out, what is a will in the eyes of the law?
Well, a will is a document signed by someone called a testator who is directing the disposition of their property upon their death.
So it's a plan for the distribution of their property, and it basically does not have any go into effect until their death.
That's correct. Until a person passes away, a will is simply a piece of paper. They can change it. They can revoke it. And as a matter of fact, when a person passes away, it is not effective until the court decrees that it is a valid last will and testament.
And just writing a will on a piece of paper is not going to make it a will.
No, that's correct. There are legal formalities that have to be complied with. A will has to be in writing, signed by the testator. And in New York State, it needs to be signed before two witnesses, who we call attesting witnesses. And the witnesses need to be over 18, and they should not be beneficiaries or otherwise interested in the will.
Right. So they should not be someone who's named in the will, probably not someone who's a relative of yours who might benefit from the will.
That's correct. They should be basically a disinterested party.
And generally, and we'll talk more about it later, if someone's using an attorney to draft a will, the attorney will supervise the signing to make sure it's proper.
That's correct. And it's actually when a will is executed under the supervision of an attorney, there is a presumption that all the legal formalities have been complied with, which you do not have if, say, for instance, a person uses LegalZoom to prepare their own will. And then the burden that the formalities were complied with actually rests on the person trying to probate the will.
And people should be aware if they get some kind of book or some kind of form or do something over the internet with a will, if there's one mistake or one thing that's not proper or one thing that doesn't fit their needs, they're going to end up with something that's possibly worthless or something that's going to cost a lot of money to litigate over.
That's correct. All the legal formalities have to be complied with. I would recommend that an attorney prepare and supervise the execution of any will.
And one size does not fit all.
No. Wills need to take into account many different factors.
And if someone has a will, assuming it's a valid form and everything, it's a very important, delicate docket. I mean, document, and it can't be tampered with because someone looking at it later on is not going to know who tampered with it.
Yeah, I've had situations where a person passes away and someone inadvertently removes, say, the staples to make photocopies. That is a potential problem in that the court may suspect the will has been tampered with. So you should never remove whatever's connecting a will together after a person has passed away, even while a person's still alive, because you want to keep that will, the integrity of that will.
And also, if someone wants to change someone or cross something out or add something, you can't just do it with a pen.
No. Any changes to a will have to be done pursuant to what we call a codicil, an amendment to a will, or pursuant to a new will, which would revoke a prior will. Any writings or alterations after a will has been signed by the testator before witnesses is ineffective.
And it's also a chance they might invalidate the entire document, depending on exactly what is done.
That's correct, because it could be evidence that the testator wanted to revoke the will.
And it's hard to know what they intended because they're no longer with us.
That's correct.
So, and you mentioned that someone can change a will really at any time for any reason, but they must be competent to do so. So let's talk about competency.
Yeah. a testator, the person signing the will, has to have what the law calls testamentary capacity. They have to know, in general terms, what they own. Also, they have to know who society would consider the natural bounty of their possessions.
And like their children or spouse.
That's correct. Okay. And they should have a general idea of what the will provides. I mean, they don't have to know every provision of the will, but they should have a general understanding. And if they have testamentary capacity, they can execute a will or they can execute a codicil, which is an amendment to a will.
And someone who's named in a will is considered a beneficiary?
That's correct. That's correct. If a person dies without a will, they would be considered what the law calls a distributee. These are what people commonly would call heirs. But a beneficiary does not need to be an heir. You could have a friend as a beneficiary, or you could have a charity as a beneficiary.
And also in a will, you could exclude children. You could exclude other relatives.
Yes. The only person you can't exclude from a will is a spouse. They have a what the law calls an elective share. They're entitled to a certain amount of an estate of a spouse. But you can disinherit children. You can disinherit any other heir, but not a spouse.
But a wife or spouse would have to sue for their share.
Yeah,
if they did not challenge it.
Yeah, they can always waive their elective share. And even a beneficiary under a will can always disclaim an amount. You're not forced to inherit money. Sometimes for planning purposes or tax purposes, it may be advantageous to disclaim or not inherit property.
Well, you might. And you mentioned something if a person does not have a will, and that's called intestacy?
That's correct.
And just explain that to us.
Yeah, if you pass away without a will, New York State provides how your property is distributed. It's under the estate powers and trust law. It's called the law of descent and distribution. And generally, the law provides that your property goes to people who you would normally consider your close relatives. If you have a spouse and children, it goes to the spouse and children. No children to the spouse. And then would go, if no spouse or children, to parents or to siblings. And you actually go out to nieces and nephews, cousins and first cousins once removed. So there's a pretty large group of people who would inherit your property if you die without a will.
Okay. But basically it would start out with only your spouse and children, first-degree relatives.
That's correct.
And others would only be reached if neither group was around.
That's correct.
But if you have a will, you can include siblings or cousins or friends.
Oh, sure.
Sure,
you can provide for whoever you want in the will. As I mentioned, the only exception would be if you try to disinherit your spouse, they do have this elective share, which in New York State is 1/3 of the estate.
And under intestacy, your children would receive equal shares.
That's correct. If you have a surviving spouse and children, the surviving spouse gets the first $50,000 off the top, and then the spouse would receive 50% of the balance, and the children would equally divide the remaining 50%.
Okay, so really everyone has a will. It's just a question of whether you're going to use the state's formula or your own formula.
In a sense, but there's certain things in a will that you could, for instance, you can appoint someone your executor. So if you may have two children, you may want to appoint one as an executor.
Oh, no, I meant for distribution of your property.
Yes,
if you don't have
correct.
Your own formula in a will, the state has a formula for you, which will automatically become yours. But as you're saying, if you don't have a will, the state could appoint whoever they want. It might be a relative, it may not, to act as your administrator. And in your own will, you can name your own executor.
Yeah, it's correct. And there is a misconception. Some people believe that if you don't have a will, the property goes to New York State. That's not true. It actually goes out to first cousins once removed. Only when you get beyond that does it what is called escheat to the state of New York.
Right. But with your will, it will be your plan, and things will be done your way.
That's correct.
And just to clarify, we didn't really discuss it yet. Who is an executor?
The executor is the person you nominate in your will who actually carries out your wishes. They would hire an attorney to probate the will, meaning to petition the court. In New York State, we call the probate court the surrogate's court, to declare the will to be valid. Once that's done, this person would receive what are called letters testamentary. It's simply a legal document issued by the court setting forth that the person has been appointed an executor and they can collect money that would have been owned by the testator.
So they are going to act on your behalf, but their job doesn't start until you pass on and the will is probated.
That's correct. Until then, again, a will until it's probated is simply a piece of paper.
And you can have two people share the responsibility?
Yeah, you can have co-executors. That's not a problem.
It does. Often,
people have, say, two adult children, and they don't want to cause any problems, so they may appoint them co-executors.
And it's also good to name a backup or successor?
Yeah, you want to usually provide for an alternate executor in case one executor has predeceased or simply does not wish to act as an executor. You can't force someone to act as an executor.
And also circumstances may have changed. They may no longer be in New York. They may be busy with other things. They may not like you anymore.
That's correct. All those reasons would make it prudent.
But the key thing is with your will, you can name who you would like.
That's correct.
And if someone has to go through intestacy, someone would have to file a petition asking that someone be appointed, and it may be a stranger.
Well, generally it would be a family member, but you could have conflict. You could have, say, three children, and they all have equal rights to be appointed in what's called an administration proceeding. That's when the person dies without a will, and it could be a dispute. And then, the court may appoint someone, and then you have people who are not happy because they weren't appointed.
And we will have a future show on legal terms someone should know about probate and wills and administration, and I know we'll be discussing those in a future show. What exactly is a bequest? I know you touched on it. What is considered a bequest in terms of wills?
A bequest is simply a statement in a will where a beneficiary is receiving either a dollar amount or a certain percentage of the estate. It's simply what they're receiving under the will.
Can it also be like an item, like jewelry or collection or a painting?
You can have a specific bequest. Most wills generally, I usually advise clients, unless they have a strong wish that, say, a daughter receives an engagement ring they have or a son receives a gold watch, not to have an itemized list, because sometimes it can cause problems. If these things are no longer in existence, it could cause a problem for the executor. And especially with money, you don't want to state certain bank accounts, because you want to be very general. Because if you say, I leave my Chase Manhattan savings account to my nephew, and when you die, there's no Chase Manhattan savings account because you switched it to Bank of America, your nephew's out of luck.
And basically, whatever passes through a will or under your estate is property that is part of the estate. And we'll discuss that after the break, exactly what is considered part of the estate. There might be other property, like a deed to a house or bank account, that will pass on its own terms and not be part of the estate.
That's correct. There are many ways you can determine how your property passes upon your death. A will is just one way. It's probably the most important.
And the will is like the catch-all, because anything not passing on its own terms will come under the will.
That's correct.
We're going to take a short break now. We'll continue our discussion of legal terms you should know about wills in a minute. Please keep in mind, whatever we're discussing is presented as information only. You must get legal or financial advice from your own attorney or accountant. Our guest is attorney George Dippel, who has an office in Bayside, Queens, New York. And you are listening to Law You Should Know here on 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College in Garden City, Long Island, New York, also broadcasting over the internet at ncc.edu/WHPC. And many programs are also on iTunes as a free download at itunes.ncc.edu. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, we want to tell you about a program with real appeal. There is a high-quality, low-cost paralegal studies program right here at Nassau Community College.
It can be your major while earning your associate's degree,
or taken as a certificate program if you already have a 2 or 4-year college degree.
It can be the start of your legal career or a great second career.
It is also a great credential in the business world.
Many of our paralegal graduates go on to 4-year colleges and even law school.
You can complete the certificate program in several months. Paralegals work in private law firms, government, and corporations on Long Island and New York City.
You can start in the summer, fall, and winter, attend full or part-time, days, nights, or weekends.
Our tuition is low, and the program is approved by the American Bar Association.
For more information, contact the paralegal program at 516-572-7774 or email us at paralegal@ncc.edu.
Once again, we continue with Law You Should Know. From the Mineola Law Firm of Shane, Dox, Denise, Corker, and Sauer, here is attorney Kenneth J. Landau.
Hi, this is Ken Landau, and welcome back to Law You Should Know. We're discussing legal terms you should know about wills, and our guest is attorney George Dipple. He's an attorney with offices in Bayside, Queens, New York, and he concentrates in the area of real property and also wills, probate, and estates. And he has a website that many of the – there are a lot of blogs and background information about wills and estates and also real property, and you can find it at dippellaw.com. That's DIPPELLLAW.com. And we'll give it the address again, the web address where you can get – find a lot of valuable information at the end of the program. George, we're talking about different types of property and what might pass through a will. Just to clarify for our audience, someone has a house and maybe it's husband and wife. What's going to happen to that property upon one of their deaths?
Well, generally, a will can dispose of both real and personal property. Most married couples usually will own a house jointly, what the law calls a tenancy by the entirety, and it actually automatically goes to a surviving spouse upon the first spouse's death. But if you have a second spouse, that person can direct in their will who would receive the real property, who would receive the house, as well as who would receive all their personal property being, say, stocks, bank accounts, other physical possessions.
But if there is a survivor alive on the deed, it's going to pass through under the terms of the deed and not under what the will says?
That's correct. If it's held jointly with a married couple as tenants by the entirety, or two people who are not married but own it jointly with the right of survivorship, that never becomes subject to the will. It automatically would vest in a survivor.
But if there's no second person there, the person has predeceased them, it's going to be resolved under the will or under intestacy.
Yeah, it becomes an estate asset which would be subject to the will or the laws of intestacy if a person had no will.
And if someone has a bank account with, let's say, a joint account?
Same principle applies. If it's a joint account in a bank, upon the holder's death, it would automatically go to the surviving joint owner by operation of law. It never becomes part of what lawyers call the probate estate.
And if they have life insurance with a beneficiary and that beneficiary is alive?
Once again, it automatically goes to a surviving beneficiary. It does not go to the pursuant to the will. It's not part of the probate estate.
And that's true for 401ks and life insurance and bonds and
yes.
Anything
yeah.
else, if there's a survivor who's alive.
Yes, that's true. The will only directs the disposition of property just in your own name. If you own property jointly or if you've designated a beneficiary, it would then go upon your death to the joint owner or to the beneficiary. It never becomes subject to the revision of your will. And that's a common misunderstanding. Many people think that they can dispose of jointly held property or property with beneficiary designations pursuant to a will. You can't.
And that's why it's always good to keep track of those designations in case you need to change them.
Yes, and also when you are having your will prepared, let your attorney know how your property is owned. Do you own it jointly? Do you have beneficiary designations? And your attorney can then properly counsel you as to how you can then draw up your will, how you can may want to change beneficiary designations or joint ownership.
And you want to know what property is going to be subject to the will and as part of your estate in general.
That's correct, absolutely.
And if you have a co-op, what happens then?
Well, a co-op under New York state law is considered personal property, and you can dispose of it pursuant to your will as you can any other personal property. Just like shares of stock in Google, you can dispose of your shares of stock in the co-op. A married couple owning a co-op jointly, the right of survivorship, however, would automatically vest the co-op in the surviving spouse. Now, that wasn't always the case. Maybe about 15 years ago, before they changed the law, there was no joint ownership allowed with a married couple. It wasn't automatic as it is with real property. And a lot of people fell into the trap of not realizing that, thinking it was the law treated a co-op the same as a house. But they actually changed the law now. So a co-op is treated the same as a house. If a husband and wife own a co-op, upon one spouse's death, it automatically goes to the surviving spouse.
Do people sometimes put their wishes for their children in terms of education or religion in a will?
Yeah, they call that a precatory language. It's not an enforceable directive like I bequeath $10,000 to my nephew, but it's kind of a wish or a desire. You know, I wish my son bring flowers to my grave every year. It's not legally enforceable, but some people, you know, they feel by putting it in the will, maybe a person would have at least some sense of obligation to do something. But it's not legally enforceable.
Can you put disinheriting language in a will if you marry outside the faith or if you join the army?
Well, you can. I guess you can. Certain things are against public policy. I mean, I don't think you could, as long as you're not discriminating against somebody due to race, religion, ethnic origin.
Right.
But I would imagine if you do that, it's probably unenforceable against public policy.
If you have a change of heart, you're better off just changing your will.
I would say so, yes.
And you mentioned children before. Another important thing parents can do in a will is name guardians for their children.
Yeah, that's correct. And also, if you have minor children, in addition to naming a guardian, and we have two types of guardians. You have a guardian of the person who is what we think of as a sort of a surrogate parent who determines, you know, where they would go to school, where they would live, could sign authorization forms. And then you have what's called the guardian of the property. They could be one and the same, but you could have two separate people. The guardian of the property is a person who handles any assets that may have been inherited by the minor. Guardianships, though, especially guardianships of property, are quite cumbersome in that you have to go to court every time you want to take out money to use for the minor. So it's very important that if you do have minor children, you, in addition to having a will, you set up a trust in your will where you appoint someone as trustee while the children are minors. A trustee is simply a person who handles the financial matters for the child. And it's not as cumbersome as a guardianship because you don't need to go back to the court every time you want to take money out, say to pay for medical services or to pay for education or pay for other things for the child.
And the most important thing is you can name a guardian of your choosing to care for your child should the need arise.
That's correct.
And you can name a successor in case that person's unable to do it.
That's correct. Now, again, a court always ultimately has a say because they always appoint a guardian in the best interest of the child. But they do give great weight to who a person would nominate in their
and
will.
And you might help avoid some fight, and at least you'll have the peace of mind of knowing and you've presumably spoken to the person ahead of time.
That it's always a good idea. Because you don't want to spring something on someone.
And even for executors, it's good to speak to someone ahead of time.
Yes, if you should, anyone you appoint as an executor, you should actually speak to them beforehand, and also after the will's been signed, give them a copy of the will. Tell them where the original is located. Maybe give them a brief summary of what you're at, where your assets are, where important documents are located, because, you know, you don't want
separately from the will, just like an inventory.
Yes. And a lot of attorneys have forms that you could fill out indicating if I have a safe deposit box at this bank, I have accounts at these institutions.
And you could also have a letter of instruction about your personal property or about jewelry. You mentioned you don't need to detail it in the will, and also your wishes for your children or for your house or for your pet.
Well, again, anything, though, that's not in the will is not legally enforceable. But if you don't anticipate any problems or disagreements among beneficiaries, you may just want to leave a letter of instruction.
And it might be some instructions, other instructions to your executor.
Yes, that's correct.
If someone is not, if one of your children, let's say, or one someone named in the will does not survive you, what happens under a will and what happens under intestacy?
Well, under intestacy, they have a list of people who would inherit the property. Generally, say, for instance, if you leave property to a child, and the child may be an adult, and they have children, so you have grandchildren, and your child has predeceased you, it would then go to their grandchildren.
And also, if you, let's say you have a handicapped child, you can make some provision for, let's say, a guardian of the personal property in a will?
Yeah, and also there's something called a supplemental needs trust. If that handicapped child is getting, say, assistance from the government, you don't want to leave them a bequest which would make them ineligible for that assistance. So you may want to put money in what's called a supplemental needs trust, which is meant to supplement and not replace government assistance.
And just going back to that, the question before, if let's say you have three children, one predeceases you. Under a will, you can say what happens to that third child's share?
That's correct. You could say that it would revert back to the estate to be divided among the two surviving children.
Or go to the, let's say they had children. It could go to their grandchildren.
That's correct. There's a term you frequently find in wills called per stirpes, which is a Latin term that confuses people, but it simply means the surviving children would inherit their parents' share.
They would stand in their shoes.
That's correct.
Now, what about under intestacy? Does that happen?
It happens, but it's a little different because, let's say, for instance, you have three children and they all have grandchildren. You have grandchildren. They all have children. If two of your children have passed away, the law of intestacy says the surviving grandchildren, they do not take their parents' share, but they divide the money which were going to both their parents, it's put together, and they divide it equally.
And so, again, a will can be exactly your way.
Right.
Sometimes parents feel that the children are sufficient. They want to leave it directly to the grandchildren.
Well, yeah. And as I mentioned, you could, if you have grandchildren, you can change that rule which intestacy provides by saying, no, I don't want it equally divided. I want each grandchild to get their parents' share.
George, we just have a few seconds left. Any final tips you'd like to offer the public?
Well, I think, again, before you prepare a will, it's always good to get as much information as you can about your assets, who you'd want as an executor, who you want as your beneficiaries, and talk to an attorney. Explain to them what your desires are, and your attorney can then prepare a will to hopefully carry out your wishes.
Okay. I wish we had some more time, but once again, this is presented as information only, not legal or financial advice. You can find more information on everything that's been discussed on George's website, dippellaw.com, DIPPEL1L, and then the word law.com. And our guest has been George Dipple, an attorney in private practice with offices in Queens, New York. You're listening to Law You Should Know here on 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College in Garden City, Long Island, New York, over the internet at ncc.edu/WHPC, and also as a podcast at itunes.ncc.edu. Please join us this same time next week for another program on Law You Should Know.